Blog Talk Radio.
Tune in each week to Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, hosted by author James T. Deshay. Tune in and dial in Tuesday, 6 p.m., 657-383-0309, Thursday, 6 p.m., 347-855-8867, and Saturdays, 8 p.m., 657-383-0309, all times Eastern. James is the author of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, and also Passion, Desire, and Contemplation. We talk about everything that's happening in our world, anything that impacts the lives of our listeners. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, email us at djames82@aol.com or call 407-394-9819 for more information. That's Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, heard here on your favorite radio station, Never Had It So Good, Sports Media Network.
This is Senator Geraldine Thompson. I didn't seek to begin my legislative career in Congress. I volunteered to assist other candidates I believed in. I was appointed to the Florida Commission on Human Relations by Governor Bob Graham and fought discrimination throughout Florida. In 2006, I was elected to the Florida House of Representatives, where I learned how to craft pieces of legislation and get them passed. In 2012, I was elected to the Florida Senate, where I focused on legislation and appropriations that meant millions of dollars for projects in my district. I learned the process from the ground up and know what it takes to be effective. Ambition is one thing and preparedness is another. In Congress, I'll be prepared to serve you on day one, and I ask for your vote on August 30th.
Paid for by Geraldine F. Thompson for Congress.
This is Geraldine F. Thompson, candidate for Congress, District 10, and I approve this message.
All right. Welcome, everyone. This is your host, James T. Deshay. Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. I am so pleased and happy to be here with you. You always know life doesn't get any better than me being on the radio talking with you and finding out what's going on in your world and sharing some stories with you and getting our opinions on record. That's what Thoughts, Love, and Reflection is all about. It's us getting our opinions on record. So I want to start off with a story that I can't even begin to tell you what I think about it. But this is one of those stories that just tug at your heartstring and you wonder what in the world is our world coming to. Pinky is a dancing flamingo and it's the animal ambassador at Busch Gardens in Tampa, Florida. And so you know that Tampa, the Busch Gardens has a lot of exotic animals that they show off. Well, a guest at Busch Gardens attacked the flamingo. Are you getting this? You pay nearly $100 to go into Busch Gardens and you ain't got nothing better than to do than to attack the dancing flamingo. And he hurt the flamingo so badly that the bird had to be euthanized. The bird was 19 years of age. And I don't know how long flamingos live, but certainly in an island environment, you don't expect for a visitor to be the reason that he is killed. And this flamingo was a happy little flamingo, loved to dance for the tourists, and now he is no longer with us because a gentleman decided that he wanted to end the life of this flamingo after paying to get into the park. You know, we have some sick people who walk amongst us. And they just don't have any clue about what being humane means. And I really would like to talk to you all just about how he was treated. He was taken to jail. He received a $2,000 bond, which means that he only has to come up with $200. And he'll be released. But when someone does something as wacky as that, for no apparent reason, he wasn't being attacked by this flamingo. I guess he just didn't like the flamingo's color, or he didn't like the way the flamingo looked, or what was so, why he was so committed or needed to kill this flamingo. But truly, I don't think that I think he needs some time to reflect. He doesn't need to get out real quick. He needs a little bit of time to reflect on why would he attack this flamingo in such a vicious way right there in front of everybody. You know, it's amazing to me that we have people who are so cruel and inhumane that they would publicly display their anger. So here's this ambassador for Busch Gardens, the dancing flamingo, going on stage, and I'm sure it wasn't a stage, but there so that everybody could see him, is attacked by a tourist. And you just wonder, where was this guy's brain at? What was he thinking of? Or why would he be so angry at the world that he would stoop to attack an animal and viciously slam him to the ground so viciously that there was nothing that could be done to survive, to help the animal survive? That's just amazing to me. I don't understand. And I guess we'll never understand people who are that cruel. But truly, he shouldn't be let out of jail right away. You know, I talk about us doing something to reduce the number of people who are incarcerated. But at the same time, we need to send a message to people who just have no self-control that we do have a place for you when you can't control your behavior. And certainly this guy displayed that. And so this was just one of those little stories I ran across, and I wanted to share it with everybody to just give an indication that there are a lot of different areas in our society that we need to work on. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so committed in my thinking related to saying that we need to come up with a curriculum for our children that help them to understand what being human means, what it means to control your emotions and not to let your anger get the best of you. I believe that a lot of the trouble that we find ourselves in would be reduced if we could get people to understand the importance of controlling their anger. So many people are just not capable of controlling their impulses that leads them to doing some desperate and crazy things. Today, I was reading a story. I didn't make it a part of the audio list that we'll be listening to today, but there was a tragic story of a young lady who was wanted for some minor violations. And they had a warrant for her arrest. And this young lady had to be in her 20s. And she had two or three kids. And there was some anger in her that she had this anger. It had to be anger in her that she just was too angry at the police, and she was not going to allow them to take her in custody. It seems like I listened to a number of the YouTube stories about her being shot and murdered by the police, that she did a lot of taping of what was going on between her and the police. And she had just created this animosity in her heart related to the police. And she was just not able to allow herself or submit herself. She just was not going to submit herself to their authority, no matter what. She had missed court a couple of times. There seemed to be some interference with police duties or something like that. But these were all minor offenses. But yet, she was unable to give herself over or submit herself to the police. And she took a stance that was going to end her life. And that's the problem. You know, we have to be realistic about what we're doing when we're talking about taking these stands against the police. We got to ask ourselves, why are we doing this? And what is going to be accomplished if we take this to the point where gunfire has to happen? And so when I looked at her, and I want you all to Google this woman who was shot with a child was in her arm at the time she was shot. There was about a 7 to 10 hour standoff where she was, you know, the police were trying to wait her out. And then ultimately there was a violent confrontation where she shot at the police a few times and they shot at her in Valencia. And eventually she was killed. But she was in her 20s. And this didn't have to happen. So I'd like you to Google that. And maybe at another show we can talk about it in depth. But I just wanted to put in your spirit. Here was a mother of three who had just got transfixed with her anger related to police officers. And she just was not going to allow them to take her in custody. A man that was living with her jumped out of the house and ran off with one of the kids, but he was eventually caught and he surrendered. But his girlfriend tragically would not surrender. And now we have a young female who's no longer with her three kids. It seems like the child will survive the wounds that the child had, but it goes along with this thought I have related to, we need to have a curriculum that we create that helps young people and young adults deal with their anger in a way that they can see the bigger picture, because this young lady just did not see the bigger picture. She was so transfixed on defying the police that she refused to allow herself to see how important she was to her kids. There was much more value in her being alive for her children than for her to allow herself to be killed because of the anger and animosity she felt for the police. And we have to talk to young people and tell them we need them to value themselves. We need them to value their futures. We need them to value their ability to interact in the future and what they mean to the world in the future, that they can't be allowed there to lives to be cut off short, to be cut short. And that's what happened in this case. She allowed her life to be cut off short because she refused to submit herself to the police. And now her children will be out without a mother for the majority of their lives. And she meant more than that to them. And we have to get people to understand their importance in the world. Despite where they may be at the moment, they can have an impact on the world, and they can't allow themselves to be caught up into the anger and darkness of what is consuming them related to their fears and those other things, you know, because a lot of young people tell you, well, I got to die sometime. And that used to make me so angry when I worked at the jail. When you see these young men and talking about, well, hey, you got to die sometime. I'm not afraid of death. And you say to them, but you got so much to live for, and there's so much life to be enjoyed that you have not nearly enjoyed the amount of life you could have enjoyed or will enjoy at the age of 20 years old. And when I look back at my being 20, I know that there was so much. From 20 to 56 right now, despite the fact that I'm not wealthy, I enjoyed my life. There was happiness in my life. You know, your life doesn't have to be happy 24/7 for it to have value. And we have to look at those things, and we have to understand those things. There comes a time when you have to understand every day is an opportunity. And when you stitch those days together and you look back, you're going to see that your life was worth living. But when you're willing to throw it away so easily for nonsense, the warrants that were out for this young lady's arrest were misdemeanors. She wouldn't have spent no long time in jail. So, you know, we have to seriously think about why are people so committed to their anger that they're willing to lose their lives. I see we got a number of callers out there. So we're going to just, on this first story or conversation, we're going to see if there's anybody out there that wants to talk about why are people so willing to lose their lives over nonsense, over the anger that they have and resentment they have against police officers. 7265, are you out there? Give us your name and where you're calling from. Are you there? All right, let's go to another caller. 3766. Are you there?
I'm here.
How you doing, Regina?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Did you hear the story that I was just talking about?
No. I try to draw you as soon as I can.
Okay, let me bring you up to speed. There was a young lady who has about 3 kids who obviously had a serious dislike for the police. She had videoed her interaction with the police a number of times, but they came to her house with a warrant to arrest her, and they got into a confrontation at which she got a shotgun, and she held the police off for several hours. This young lady was in her 20s, and she ended up getting killed by the police. Her boyfriend escaped the house, and he was caught maybe a block or so away, but he survived. But she did not survive. She took a number of shots at the police, and they took a number of shots at her. And this just goes back to what we had discussed before, is how do we rid ourselves of this anger that exists in these young people and these young adults that that they don't fear losing their lives.
That sounds like it's something above us. Sounds like there was some mental health issues there. And that seems to be a total disregard for authority. And I can guarantee you that unless she had some sort of serious crisis in her life after the age of 18, that from 7 until 18, she had issues in school. I can guarantee you that.
But you have so many of these young people who would tell you, Regina, you know, hey, you got to die sometime. You know, that as though they have no value of their humanity and their existence, and that they go around prepared to create adversarial relationships with people that might end with them dying. You know, I was just saying, I'm 56 years of old, and I hope I can get it. You know, if the Lord could bless me with another 56, I sign off on it. Because I'm enjoying my life. I'm enjoying existing. But why is it that we have so many young people that are not happy with living?
Well, a few seconds ago, I put you on mute and asked my daughter, what did that YOLO mean, YOLO? And because it was a record or something, and it said you only live once. You only live once. And they were just so proud to go around singing that song. And with that let me know, oh, have all your fun now because you only live once. Take your risk now. You only live once. Do everything now because you only live once. And to me it sounds like they're saying, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, negative or positive, you only live once. So why not, instead of using that to live a negative life or to have these negative confrontations, why don't you make that you only live once creed mean that you're going to do everything good now? Disrespect for authority, having an attitude of I'm invincible, I can do what I want to do. Those are the attitudes that we have.
And they seem so prepared. You know, I cannot imagine. You know, I listened to a story a few days ago, and this lady owns a gun shop, and she talked about how she was forced to shoot someone who had came in the shop to rob her, and the person that killed her husband. And she said even to this day, she wished that it didn't happen, because she has to live with the fact that she killed somebody. And the thought that you could so easily live with pulling your gun out, pointing it at somebody, and shooting them, and that person no longer live, that is amazing to me. That you really walk around thinking, okay, I can pull this weapon out and use it, and I ain't got no fear of using it, but not understanding that there's going to be somebody who's no longer going to wake up again, somebody who's no longer going to be able to have a relationship or connection with their children or with their mothers or their sisters or their brothers, and will be a result of you because you chose to end their lives. You know, Regina, who wants to live with that?
Well, I the best program, and you've often heard me talk about my daughter, but the best program that she's ever been involved with was a program, and it was really odd because one weekend she had to, and it wasn't that she had to, I chose for her to spend overnight in jail, which was a program that they have here in our city where you go overnight and you see really how it is being in jail. They strip you, you know, where you're naked, but they take your clothes. She had rubber bands in her head. She had to take her rubber bands off, your shoelaces and stuff. Well, she did that, and then that next morning, I registered her for another program at the hospital. She went over to that program, and that was the best program because it took those children through the morgue. It took them through the emergency room, and it showed them, it reenacted, and they even saw a real corpse. And so they really saw the aftermath of what happens after that gun has been pulled, that trigger has been pulled. They saw what happens when you're thrown from a car or when you're beat up or all of this stuff. They saw the bruises. They saw the dead bodies. That right there, while people may say that it is too harsh, it is the reality that our children live in. It is the harsh reality. Yesterday, I think I can't remember if I said this on your show or another show, but just in a couple of days, we've had two of my students to go to jail for pulling a trigger, one dead. We had a young lady, 21, to be thrown out of a van on a highway and get hit by an 18-wheeler. And then just as I was coming in, I'm looking at, I don't know how old this young man was, 18, 19, committed suicide. Very handsome young man. Very. And as I'm going down the road, I'm just praying, God, tell me, show me what to do. Lord, please let me get a group of praying people together to pray for our children. Because now it's just one thing after another. And it seems to happen as they're entering into their next stage of life. And as your caller said yesterday, we need to do some intensive, deliberate, corporate prayer.
Well, we have to convince people of the magnitude that they can play in the future of not only their lives and their communities, but in our society, and that we cannot sit around and waste their existence. Regina, I want you to stay there. I'm going to see if we got some other callers. We've got quite a number of callers, and see if they want to chime in.
Great.
1958. Give us your name and where you're calling from. Would you like to chime in on how do we convince young adults of their value and what it is that they can obtain if they're willing to just live their lives out and not just throw them away? One 1958, are you there? All right, we'll come back. You know, it's just so important that we be able to, you know, when we're having these discussions, we want the opportunity to try to convince people of what their worth is and inspire them to understand that we want them to be committed to living a positive lifestyle. Okay, we're going to go back to the phone lines. 9454. You there? Give us your name and where you're calling from. Are you there? Well, Regina, why do you think the school system would be willing to have a curriculum that taught humanity or the reason why we should be good citizens or be committed to our futures? Is that something that you've heard about or seen or know about? Because I've never heard that we teach that kind of thing. Have you been aware of something like that?
No, the closest I think I've gotten to it is I've heard of civics classes, and I've heard of the term man's inhumanity to man as it relates to some literature, but that's not until they get, like, into high school. But I've heard you say, and when you said it, James, it makes so much sense. Teach, and they do teach values now in the lower grades, and I've heard some little children walking down the hall reiterating what they heard their teachers say, and it's just a wonderful thing to say that. But an intent, deliberate course on humanity, I think you should try to write something, at least an outline for the course.
Well, I think that's what we're missing. I think we're one of the reasons why we have such tragic stories happening around us every day is because we need to put in the minds of our young people at an early age the value they have to their community and the importance of them loving each other in a way that they don't look at having the animosity that they can have. It seems that when these young people become adults, they're filled with such rage and anger and hatred that they put themselves in precarious situations, and a lot of times they don't survive these situations that they put themselves in. That's what I'm concerned about. How do we help them to understand the importance of them living and not trying to shorten their lifespans? We have some other callers out here. I'm going to try to get everybody in. I see 7983. Would you like to chime in and tell us, what do you think? What do we need to do in order to help young people and young adults understand their true value in our society? All right, I don't have many people who want to talk today, but I just wanted to share that. And, that's a story. I really do want everybody to Google that story. I want everybody to Google the story related to this young woman who died as a result of having a shootout with the police. And so we can go into more detail about it. But I'm going to go ahead, Regina.
Suppose, I'm hearing us talk about what can the young people gain. But I also want to look at it from another perspective, James, in that we tell each other, and we as adults start complimenting each other and seeing the value in each other and speaking that and letting our children hear us give value to other people. And when they see us doing that, maybe some of that will infiltrate their spirit. And when they see us as examples, then they will start sort of seeing value in their peers like we see value in our peers. If we see value in us, then we can tell these young people, we can feel that we have enough in us, because some of us don't feel good about ourselves and don't feel that they have something to offer these young people. But we do.
Well, there's one thing to feel like you don't have anything to offer, Regina, but there's another to just say to yourself, I don't care about dying. You know what I'm saying? I mean, look, like I used to believe, I thought I heard that self-preservation was the most, was one of the things that people were the most committed to, that people are truly committed to their self-preservation. But some of these young adults don't seem to care about self-preservation. Like, if you take this young lady for instance, what other outcome could there possibly have been? She took a shotgun, pointed it at the police, fired a couple of times for a misdemeanor. So had they even taken her into custody, what was her life going to be like from then on? I mean, you have to look beyond just that moment. If she had killed someone or hadn't they taken her in custody, her life was going to be changed forever.
But what about the people who had influence on her before she got to this point? Who was around her to influence her before she got to that point, or even while she was in school doing all of these crazy things, which I believe she probably did? I don't think that just happened that day. I believe she's been doing this kind of foolishness for a long time. But who was trying to help her? Not saying that nobody tried. Maybe they got tired, but that's just a question. Where were her role models?
All right, 2730, chime in for us. 2730, give us your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Audrey from Lakeland, Florida. I think that some of the discussion is right on point. And as it relates to, we have reached a point now where our youth are not fearful. You know, I guess several years ago, it was a popular logo, have no fear. And when we asked ourselves the question of what was she thinking, I believe she was in front of her child, which is a young age. So look at the dramatic impact that that child would have. If I'm not mistaken, may have been two children. One may have been hit with a gun and was carried to the hospital, and one just may have witnessed it. But even so, you asked the question of what would cause a person to make that kind of choice. I think it's just frustration and a lack of hope. Very well could have had some mental issues, but just hopelessness. I think that's the only place that a person could be to make those type of choices and decisions. And similar to what Regina has mentioned, it's unfortunate that someone that was close to her didn't raise the flag to help her to get some help. And, you know, when people are in a state of hopelessness, at that point they don't care about themselves. They are willing to give up. And I think that was the stage in which she had reached.
Well, I want to share with you, Audrey, that I went back and I looked at the YouTube, and I really want all of you to Google it on YouTube and look at it. At one point, the police waited for a number of hours, and during that time, she had time to stalk her child, and she asked the child, you know, what do you think the police are here for? And the child said, they're here to kill us. And, you know, it seems like to me she had not only indoctrinated herself to be afraid of the police or think that the police were out to kill her, she was even indoctrinating that into her baby.
That next generation, that's sad. That is sad because now coupled with the fact that her mother, his or her mother is deceased because of that, that now will breed that hatred. And that goes from one generation to the next generation. And I really regret hearing that she had that discussion with her child. That person will actually need some counseling and some help to move forward.
Yeah, if you look, she was a small, attractive young lady, and I cannot imagine how dismal her brain or her thought patterns were that she had convinced herself that this had to be her end. And she selected this as an option. Don't you think, Regina, don't you think she decided this day I'm going to leave here as a result of being killed by the police.
Yes, I agree with you. Regardless of how the option came about or what led up to her making that choice, she ultimately had to make a choice as to whether or not she was going to have that gun, whether or not, you know, because I guess she could have put it down, but she chose not to. Why did she choose not to? Mental illness, hopelessness, whatever. But why was the choice made? And as you said, the choice was made.
There was definitely a choice made. I mean, she made a conscious decision not to to go beyond or live beyond those few days. I have another call I want to try to see if I can get in here. 1958. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Good afternoon, Mr. Deshaun. Good afternoon, ladies. You know what I was thinking about as everyone was talking, and I know nowadays these kids are smoking weed, and it's a different type of weed that they're smoking. It's not like back in the days when we were smoking weed. They're lacing this stuff with all other kind of chemicals, and that stuff is making them act weird, just like that elephant tranquilizer that they used to smoke a long time ago. It's making these kids act weird because you can even see them on the streets and they look like they're out of their mind, and you try to say something to them and it's like they're in a zone, like they're a zombie. So it could have been that that young lady was on something at that time because, like you said, she was on, I did go and look at it, she was on the ground with her baby. And first of all, why are you on the ground like that with the baby? And then the guy that she was with left, broke out the, well, not broke out, but ran out the back way. You know, so what was going on before that that put her down on the floor? And like the other caller said, low self-esteem, you know, not thinking that she could, that the situation was going to change. So she decided it's either me or him. So the only thing that she was thinking about was that this is it, you know, like this is it, the song that Michael Jackson sang, this is it, this is it. Mm-hmm. So it's either going to be me or him, you know, and she lost her life. And I don't think she was in her right state of mind during that time. And like the other caller also said, who was she around when she was growing up? What type of environment was she raised in? Was she around positive people or was she around negative people? Did she look at shooting and cussing all the time on the TV? That plays a big part with these young people too, you know, what they see on TV and who they hang around.
And it's just amazing to me because, you know, when you make a conscious choice to pick up a gun in a no-win situation. You know what I'm saying? This is a no-win situation. You are not going to outshoot these police officers. You know, they got,
right,
they don't surround you by now. All of them got these huge weapons. They got all kind of bullets in them, and you got one shotgun. And you just normally, you are all right. I think there had to be something going on because normally you don't think a woman would take that kind of position when she got children.
And you know what? I was also reading that they don't have the body cam. They said that they only had it in their particular district for a couple of weeks, so they don't know what footage is on there. Now, we're looking at it on one side. There still could be another side to that story because I'm sitting here thinking as you're talking, there was an incident out here in California where the guy was doing a high-speed chase. And when he got out of the car, once his car stopped, when he got out, he started shooting at the police. I mean, like he had two guns in his hand. It was like you were watching a movie. But they retaliated, but they didn't shoot him to the point that they killed him, but they shot him in his leg to bring him down. Now, what's the difference in him and then the lady that they shot and killed and also wounded the little baby, right?
Right. The child was wounded.
So,
and,
I don't know.
You know, and you're right, but I guess I want, this is one of those cases where it's hard to, you know, you could argue that the police should have tried to see if they could have taken her alive, but for her to make the choice to grab this shotgun and to fire it, again, you got three kids that you're the mother of. And I don't understand how she came to that final conclusion that was best for her and her kids.
Yeah,
now, usually
we gotta,
have a man
we
full
gotta,
of...
We have to go back to the word of God. You know, the enemy is running rapid to and fro trying to see who he may devour. At that point, her heart could have been hard to where she did not care. You know, it's like I just have that don't care attitude. So whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, and then now these kids have to live with that. Audrey, what are your thoughts about how she came to this final conclusion and picked up this gun and was willing to fight with these police officers? That's not normally a position a woman takes, especially a woman that has children.
Well, it's not the position of a young mother. I think she's 20, in her 20s with three children. Again, I just think she was at the point of hopelessness. She may very well have been intoxicated on something, but just didn't think through the consequences of her choices. We all make choices, hundreds of choices every day. But she did not think through the consequences of the impact, the long-term impact that would have, not necessarily on her, but her children that can't necessarily speak for themselves.
And if you think about what Regina said, now these people or these kids, or someone said it, they will now hate the police even more. Maybe, Audrey, I'm not sure who said it, but they will be indoctrinated now to believe or to embrace hatred of police because they've seen their mother be killed by them. So who steps in the gap for them so that they don't become these angry young adults?
Yes, you're right. And the gentleman that fled out the back door, I mean, he must have obviously realized her being out of her mind. And he was just trying to get out of there, I'm thinking. I don't know, maybe he too triggered some parts of it. We'll never know, but we do have to pray for the children, and that's for sure.
Because if they're to have any kind of life, they're going to have to believe that, you know, that they can have a future that goes beyond their 20s and that they can – they have a value that they can look toward their future. But who helps them to know that when this gentleman doesn't seem to, I don't think he was married to their mother. I'm not sure if he was their biological father. He will be, and he'll be locked up for a little while, so he won't be caring for the kids. So I guess they will, the kids will go to their grandparents, possibly. I don't know. Regina, what do you think as we enter the late parts of the show? You know, how do we impact people's lives to the point that we're able to give them a greater sense of hope than some of these young people are now feeling?
James, we've got to break the cycle. Now, I'm sitting here listening, and I'm listening to all of this wisdom. We've got to break the cycle. One example, when I first had my daughter, I used to beat her, not spank her, but beat her. I beat her because I was beat in the old-fashioned sense. But then I had to realize that that wasn't working, and somebody had to break that cycle. I say that because as I'm thinking about this young lady, and she had children, I used to teach in the middle school. I couldn't figure out how in the world these children got to where they were with the attitudes that they had and the nastiness and the disrespect. Then when I left from the middle school setting and went to the elementary school and actually am working directly with kindergarten and first grade, second grade teachers, I'm interacting with these babies. To have a baby come and tell me that their house was shot up that weekend and she had to hide in the closet. And it's okay, Ms. Williams, because they weren't looking for us. They were looking for my uncle. So then this child comes to school with that. How about it was the uncle that was killed this weekend? So even when the children will get therapy, they're still going to go back into that environment because that's, you know, the mother's there, the grandmother's there. So the stuff is still perpetuating itself. How do we stop what's going on in these households and in these communities? How do we stop it so that the children can be cleansed and purified and become better adults? It's like having a glass of water that's dark. How do we pour clear water and keep pouring it in until the water that's in that glass becomes clear? How do we do it? What do we do? I don't know if I'm asking a rhetorical question, but to hear you all talk about what happened to that 21-year-old or 20-year-old, however that old that lady was, and her children. Now, yes, those children are going to have to get therapy now, but who is going to take them to the therapy? And when they leave that therapeutic session, what type of environment are they going back into?
Audrey, what do you think society, what role should society play in the intervention of these type lives?
Well, we have to organize ourselves such that we can start at a young age and implement values, I would hope, and this is just my perspective, that would be Christian values, truly implemented. And we have to just start speaking up and speaking out and taking action. If we think about it, I'm sure people in the neighborhood realize the situation that was there. Grandparents and our family members. As family members, we have to have the courage sometimes to just call the situation the way it truly is. If we have someone in our family that, as blacks, we feel that it's a shame or negative that people are dealing with mental illness. But, you know, it's a reality, but seek the help of the professionals to get assistance for that. But for these children to have the stigma associated with what occurred in their life at such an early age, and just think about it, let us digest it for a moment, that they're so young and they no longer have a mother. I'm blessed that my mother's still alive. I thank God. I mean, 97 years old. So I can't relate. I do know my father has passed, and he passed when I was in my late 20s. But still, that's a relatively longer time than what these children have. And the question is valid. Who steps in and help them to really grow and mature? Because if it's the same people that had impact or influence of her life, the young lady that killed herself, then do we really want those same members to influence these younger ones who have even more serious and severe situations to deal with? I don't know what the answer is. I just know that we have to pray, have faith, because surely she didn't have hope. And be mindful when people give us signals that they're at their last, their wit's end, as people say, that we step in and provide a encouraging word. And I would just like to say, so many times we get hung up on ministers and them being behind the pulpit and their responsibility. But as Christians, we are responsible for actions as well. And an act of kindness, an act of love, an act of encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
It won't cost
yes.
us anything,
yes.
but it surely
yes.
can save someone's life. And good God, if you have that opportunity to do that and help just one, as it says in the scripture, even the angels shall rejoice. So while I don't know the answer, I think part of the solution is, again, implementing what we can do.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with Kathy. Kathy, I'll give you 2 minutes. Can you, in 2 minutes, give me your thoughts? Summarize this for me.
I can't do that. but you know what? Dialogue. We need to dialogue just like we're doing right now. Someone needs to be taking notes. And every time we get together, talk about what we think can help. And then go from there. Put something together and go from there. That's how it starts. You know, because even if we reach one person, we've done something different. You know, talking to them, encouraging them, telling them, you know, that they can make it, that it is going to be all right. That just because it looks bad doesn't mean it's going to be like that. Giving them examples of our lives, how we used to be. I know I used to be something else, but thank God for change, you know. I mean, that's what I think should be done or could be done. And then much prayer. Pray without ceasing.
Well, it's no mistake that we're going to have to find a way because it's just not her. There's some other hopeless individuals out there who are going to have the same fate. And if we don't find a solution or come, our country is not willing to commit itself to some type of intervention, we're creating the anger that is going to bite us when these people become in their 20s. I want to thank you guys so much for calling in and being such a big part of the show. It is, I tell you, I can't begin to tell you how quickly we get to the end of a show when we all are participating, and that's exactly what happened today. I got a quick commercial that I'm going to go to before the show ends. But again, I just want to thank you all for calling in and being a great part of this show.
This is Senator Geraldine Thompson. I didn't seek to begin my legislative career in Congress. I volunteered to assist other candidates I believed in. I was appointed to the Florida Commission on Human Relations by Governor Bob Graham and fought discrimination throughout Florida. In 2006, I was elected to the Florida House of Representatives, where I learned how to craft pieces of legislation and get them passed. In 2012, I was elected to the Florida Senate, where I focused on legislation and appropriations that meant millions of dollars for projects in my district. I learned the process from the ground up and know what it takes to be effective. Ambition is one thing and preparedness is another. In Congress, I'll be prepared to serve you on day one, and I ask for your vote on August 30th.
Paid for by Geraldine F. Thompson for Congress.
This is Geraldine F. Thompson, candidate for Congress, District 10, and I approve this message.
All right, everybody. We're at the end of another show, and I just want to thank you for being out there and supporting me. And this is your call to action. I want all of you, others, to play a part in our show and come to the table so that we can really have an impact on the world around us. Take care, everybody, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Tune in each week to Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, hosted by Author James T. Deshay. Tune in and dial in Tuesday, 6 p.m., 657-383-0309, Thursday, 6 p.m., 347-855-8867, and Saturdays, 8 p.m., 657-383-0309, all times Eastern. James is the author of Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, and also Passion, Desire, and Contemplation. We talk about everything that's happening in our world anything that impacts the lives of our listeners. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, email us at djames82@aol.com or call 407-394-9819 for more information. That's Thoughts, Love, and Reflections, heard here on your favorite radio station, Never Had It So Good, Sports Media Network.